This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
I outgutted him, I outlasted him, I outfigured him, I outfilmed him, I somehow outperformed him even. And, I give you an example, and I mean it shows the amount of egomania in the man. We distributed in our camp in the jungle breakfast on days where there was no shooting, and each hut would have coffee and the camera people and then the light people and the sound people, and in a row, in a certain sequence of things. And, of course, the last hut would only have the lukewarm coffee. So we changed order. On that very day, Kinski was the last in line. His coffee was lukewarm. And I heard him screaming from 300 feet away, out of his mind, because his coffee was lukewarm. But the situation was this. We had a plane crash. And we had a radio, a shortwave radio, which was only garbled messages. We knew something cataclysmic had happened. We only knew the plane was down, 6 people in it. We tried to figure out where was it. Can we send out a rescue party? Kinski arrives screaming, already foam at his mouth, and steps that close in my face and yells at me for an hour and a half. And I try to persuade him. I try to say, Klaus, we have a plane down. 6 people may be dead. We have to organize a search party. And he would yell about his lukewarm coffee. He would yell about this. And I outperformed him. You know what? I went to my hut because I had one last piece of Toblerone, this triangular Swiss chocolate, which was of the highest value in the jungle. I mean, I had kept it for weeks and weeks, hid it away, wrapped it away against the ants and so, and I had this. And I came back with this piece of chocolate and I peeled off the foil of it and ate it right. I stepped that close into his face and ate the piece of chocolate. And that was too much for him. He just fell silent. And he wiped his froth away. You see, the froth at his mouth would harden. It was very hard sort of froth. After an hour, it solidifies somehow. And wiped it off, and then he left.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dan.
And I'm Mike.
So welcome to 15 Minute Film Fanatics. The premise of the show is that one guy nominates a movie to the other guy. They both watch it separately, but they don't discuss it till they're on the podcast. Today, Mike, what movie are we doing today?
My Best Fiend.
My Best Fiend, not friend, but Fiend, by Werner Herzog, 1999. We've done 3 of his films already on the podcast. We've done Fitzcarraldo, we've done Aguirre, The Wrath of God, and we've done Nosferatu. We love those movies. We love everything about them. You can go back and listen to those episodes. I'd wanted to see this for a long time. I finally watched it. First thing I did was text Mike and say, you have to watch this movie. I have no idea what he's about to say about it. In part one, we talk about our overall take on the film. Mike, go.
Here's the most impressive thing about this movie. Let's flash back real quick to another Werner Herzog movie that I love, which is Grizzly Man. And in the middle of Grizzly Man, there's a problem, which is that Werner Herzog has the footage of the guy being killed by the grizzly bear. That's not a spoiler. But he can't show it, because if you show it, it would ruin the movie. But if you have it and you do nothing with it, then you've wasted something. God has given you a gift and you've just buried it. So instead, what he does is he has the camera film himself watching the footage and listening to it while the guy's surviving girlfriend watches him watching it. And he goes like, "Tracy, you must never watch this footage. You must never watch this footage." And I remember even as a kid being so impressed by how he got around technical problems, which brought you further into his own consciousness, because he's just a brilliant filmmaker with an intuitive sense for exactly the right thing at the right time. And I say that because this movie is full of that kind of technique. In the opening scene, he walks around the apartment, the pension where he used to live, which is just a bunch of rented rooms that all share a bathroom. And now a rich couple lives there and they've renovated it into a huge apartment. And he's walking around sort of with his hands out, like feeling as though by the force where everything used to be 40 years ago, with unbelievably funny commentary. And the joke is, of course, that he used to live there with Klaus Kinski, who was in his teens and already becoming an actor and acting crazy when Werner Herzog was a boy.
Destroying the bathroom,
you know, and saying all kinds of crazy things about the people who lived here. But the point is that when it comes to Klaus Kinski, he finally said, you know, that he wanted to be seen as intuitive, but the intuition came from all this practice, and we could hear him in his room. And one beautiful thing he said was that he mastered the intonation of actors in the 50s in Berlin, which he said was this nasal, weird thing. And he's talking to this artsy couple that own it. Perhaps they go to the theater or whatever. Maybe they're in on the joke. He knows, however, that the audience watching the documentary is not in on the joke. They don't understand what he means. So he starts to break the film sound away from the film. He's still watching and talking to the couple and gesticulating with his hands, and he's still in the past. But what we're hearing is very similar recordings, or recordings of early Klaus Kinski doing recitation of German poetry or stage play from the 50s, which bridges us into the next section. And that's how he uses filmic techniques, the stuff that only film can do, to get you into his brain. And I just think that that's brilliant.
Yeah, that stage thing he's showing, that's his one-man show where he would be Jesus. And that's where people are trying to get him off the stage. And he says, you know, take the mote out of thine own eye before mine. And so I think what's great about that is that when they cut from the apartment to him on the train, remember he's on a train and you hear Kinski talking, that's Kinski playing Jesus, saying what he's going to do to all the slanderers. They're going to go into this terrible, vile soup. And he says, in this juice shall the slanderers stew. And that brings up the issue, like, well, is Werner Herzog committing slander? Like, how are you presenting this guy? And that's what's really interesting about it, because Kinski's dead. I think he died in 90 or 91. This movie comes out in 99. And so you have to credit him, because in the beginning, I thought the movie was going to be like Citizen Kane. We're going to get all these different glimpses of this guy, and we're going to try to figure out who this guy was. But it's not really like Citizen Kane, because you pretty much learn who the guy was over and over and over.
Immediately.
It's the same image. It's not like Charles Foster Kane. Well, is he to be pitied or despised? Well, here it's kind of, even with the butterfly, which I'm sure we'll talk about at the end.
How did I not know that his soul wanted to ascend into the heavens like a butterfly?
Well, I think Klaus Kinski is a one-trick pony, and I think the movie substantiates every kind of bad thing you've ever heard about him. Kinski doesn't become likable. He doesn't become approachable. He doesn't become understandable. He's entertaining to watch him rave at the guy in Fitzcarraldo about the food. Like, that's our entertainment. But I think that what's interesting about the movie is there's no dark side to Klaus Kinski. Like, he's all dark side with a few little, occasions of light. And those lights are either in the films when we watch him. That whole scene from Wozzeck is great, where he finds that Marie has been sleeping with the major. But he's very much like, isn't he like Aguirre and Fitzcarraldo? and Nosferatu?
Yeah, and that brings up an interesting question, which is, how much is Werner Herzog to be believed? And I think that he invites that question. He tries to substantiate with as much evidence as he can. But I think the viewer is invited to the following question, which is, if Klaus Kinski made a documentary about working with Werner Herzog, what would Werner Herzog look like? And there's that scene where Werner Herzog, for whatever reason, is filmed standing alone on the hillside with the trees behind him, holding a book.
Holding Kinski's autobiography.
His autobiography, a lot of which has been invented. Yeah. And then he goes into how it was invented. And he's saying, I was actually there when some of it was invented, because we were making up funny words for him to put in, just like what happens to the slanderers. And so I don't have an opinion on this, but I want to ask yours, which is, how much of this is to be believed, and how much of this is Kinski complicit in trying to create that image so that he could be that image? And how much do you buy Werner Herzog? How do you take him at his word?
Yes and no. And I know that's a terrible answer, but I think that Kinski is, I think it's, the autobiography scene is great, right? Because he says, I helped, because remember what he says? He says, Klaus Kinski said, if I put in here that we got along well, then no one will buy the book. And people loved it. Like, no one wants to read a biography of somebody who pretty much like went to work every day and came home and their life was good. You don't want to read a biography of the little boy who ate all his vegetables and everything went well for him. You want to read the biography of Lord Byron or something.
Typically, you like his art, though.
Yes. Oh,
that's
absolutely.
That's why more people read Madame Bovary than care about Flaubert.
Right, exactly. Right. So, but in terms of, do I buy Herzog? I think that the movie is interesting because it makes you think about, well, how, if you had to portray somebody in an hour and a half or 2 hours, what would you choose? So someone tells me to make the Mike movie. So I have full access to
very,
the whole
very life. Similar.
Yeah, and exactly, my best fiend. So I have to make the Mike movie, right? Like, well, how could you fit it on 2 hours? Like, you couldn't. So I think that the movie invites you to kind of like play with that. Because remember, the first scene of the movie is Kinski pretending to be Jesus. Like, that's no accident. That's who this guy was. He was an egomaniac. He wants Herzog to reshoot the beginning of Aguirre, which is that scene is unbelievable. The first time you see them all walking down the mountain, he says, I want a close-up. Now, we know a close-up would be wrong. The whole point is that nature dwarfs these conquistadors out there. But when you see the clip of Jason Robards and Mick Jagger doing Fitzcarraldo, and then you see the clip of Klaus Kinski, and you're like, yeah, okay, the Kinski one is a mile away. It's not even the same movie, and that's why Herzog had to put up with him. So in terms of, like, is Werner Herzog in on the act? Like, yeah, I think he is in on the act, but we'll never know. That you can't get to the bottom of it. I think he put up with Kinski because of what we see with Kinski versus Jason Robards.
Well, I also think that they admittedly had a deep interdependence.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody could have gotten those kinds of performances, right? What Werner Herzog is actually complimenting on himself on is, he's saying, during certain scenes, I captured the lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
It's not my lightning, but it's also not his bottle.
It's my bottle.
Lightning
as a director.
In a bottle.
Right. I'm the director and I supplied the bottle and I captured the lightning. He says in the beginning, we were two critical masses that resulted in a dangerous mixture when they come into contact. And I thought to myself, well, what other directors and actors are like that? And the first one I thought of like Robert De Niro and Martin Scorsese. Right. But like, from everything I've read about them, they didn't have that kind of relationship at all. Like, De Niro read Jake LaMotta's book and he gave it to Scorsese in the hospital and said, hey, I think this could be a really good movie. Why don't you make this a movie? And maybe that, you know, but here it's volatility is what makes it entertaining.
Welcome back. So in part two, of course, we talk about key scenes or scenes that are indicative of the themes of the film as a whole. Dan, what do you got?
My moment is when Herzog is talking about what Kinski meant to him as an actor. And he says that at 15, he saw him in this film called Children, Mothers, and a General. And he shows how he wakes up each time and looks at his watch. And you get it three times in a row. And I love that because he says it's funny. Herzog says it's interesting how time can magnify a moment like that. And I love it because it's not a clip where it's like, it's not once more into the breach, dear friends, once more. It's not some big quote unquote dramatic moment. He just was so taken by the way that this guy woke up sleeping at a table in a movie, that he never forgot it. And I thought to myself, that's a real movie lover's thing. The way that people who love poetry admire a certain phrase or a certain sound, and the people that admire painting admire brushstrokes. And so it made me start thinking, well, what are some small moments like that that I love in movies, right? And I came up with two really quick, and then maybe I'll hear one of yours. One is after the commotion in Rick's bar, in Rick's Cafe American, there's a part where Humphrey Bogart just walks by a table and turns a glass right side up. That every time, and then he keeps walking, he just fixes the glass, it's on its side. Every time I see that, it knocks the wind out of me. I just love the way he does that. There's another bit Notorious where Alicia Huberman, played by Ingrid Bergman, is driving. She's driving drunk, and Cary Grant's next to her. And eventually he says to her, come on, come on, move over, move over. She starts arguing with him and slapping him. And just his face as she's slapping him, I think, is so good. And those moments are so good because they mean something to me at the time I watched them the first time. And that if you love movies, your head is filled with little moments like that that aren't like the famous ones. Like, for example, if I said to you right now, I'm going to put you on the spot, what's a small, tiny detail you love from The Godfather? Give me one.
Oh, when he's the way that he's juggling the oranges when he's playing with his kids in the backyard before he dies.
Right. So you didn't say, I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse. You didn't say the horse's head. You didn't say the murder of the fight. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was like that small moment, the way that Brando's playing with the kid with the oranges, right? That those small moments really affect us as viewers. And if you're tuned into what a movie does, like that's one of the reasons we keep going back. So I love that moment because it shows you what Herzog loves about movies and what drew him to Kinski.
But I think it speaks also to their interdependence a little further, because there's a certain point in the life of the artist when you see something as a young person that you love, and you ask yourself a question that the rest of the audience doesn't ask them, which is, how is that so beautiful? You ask yourself, how is that done?
How is that done?
How is, and you, so I think that there are small kind of pinpoint moments where the beauty of whatever you're doing, like for Herzog, it must have been film. The beauty of the film envelops him, but you have a thought to yourself, which is, why is it so difficult to look like you just woke up without looking like an actor who just woke up? Why is that so hard? And you think, what is that mercurial thing about actors that they can do? And so I think that part of what Herzog is signing in that moment is that part of my love of film in general and the thing that would shape my life is this guy.
Right.
And part of the person who made him famous, instead of the implication is that Kinski would have been seen as a raving lunatic the rest of his career and nobody would know who he is. The only reason you know who this guy is because he got involved with me. But let me tell you something. One of the reasons I became me was because I saw that.
Because of him, right. Awesome, awesome. So what's your moment?
There's a beautiful moment when they're out in the jungle and Werner Herzog has staged these shots then and now to show you how comfortable he feels in the jungle. He's in the jungle in a polo, like tucked into his jeans, and his pants are all dirty, but he wants nobody else around him in those shots. Now there must be a crew. Somebody's carrying the camera, right? So he wants to be filmed all the time. He's beneath a waterfall. He's sitting on a log. And what he's telling you is, I can be Werner Herzog equally well in a panel discussion or in an apartment in Berlin or out here in Brazil. And I can do it anywhere because I am Werner Herzog and I'm at one with nature. But he teases Klaus Kinski for wanting to be seen the same way, because he said that we could be on a shoot for 3 months. He would never leave camp except to venture out 100 meters into the forest, you know, and lay on a log, because he always talked about the media as swine and he didn't want to get dragged down to the level of the swine. But he was totally fine to be seen like the swine, you know, laying out on the log and talking about the beauty of Mother Nature. That's in air quotes.
Well, you know, I love what that scene that Herzog says about nature, which is actually from the movie River of Dreams, about the making of Fitzcarraldo. There's a part where he talks about, you know, he says, I can't do the voice. You know, he says, like, you know, I see nothing erotic about nature. It's all fornication and it's all misery. And yet I love it. So I think that's what's fascinating about his relationship with Kinski too, is that it's rough and it's hard and there's a lot of misery and a lot of pain in it, and yet I love it. So welcome back. In part 3, we talk about the ending or the title. The title is self-explanatory. The ending, we get his death, which we could talk about, Herzog's reasons for why he thinks Kinski died, metaphorically, and also the bit with the butterfly. So, Mike, where do you want to start?
I guess we have to start with the butterfly, which is not where you expect this movie to end, with him using footage from one of the movies. I think it was Fitzcarraldo, it must have been, that they were filming, and a butterfly lands on Kinski. And with so much gentility, he made the butterfly feel comfortable. Why didn't I know that his soul was a butterfly that wanted to ascend to heaven? And you just like, it's just such a weird place for the documentary to land, because he wants you to know what an insane guy he shot somebody. They say that he
shot three times through the wall. Yeah.
And Fitzcarraldo, he shot through the wall. He shot the tip of the finger, one of the extras' finger off. And one of the other extras who was there at the time said there was so much blood, we thought that he had hit the man in the body. Like we thought that he had killed somebody.
And they offered to kill him. Remember, the extras offered Herzog, shall we kill him for you?
And they were serious. And so for him to be as a beautiful butterfly, I mean, what is it that's the butterfly? Is it that a talent is ephemeral? Is it that the times looking back on making those movies now from the hindsight of success, that it's amazing that they were made at all? Or does he really feel that way about Kinski? I have a lot of trouble teasing those apart as a viewer.
Me too, because I don't love the butterfly. I love this movie. I'll definitely watch it again, but I don't love the butterfly bit. It's a little too, you know, to use a Mike phrase in past episodes, it's a little too on the nose. It's a little too like, this guy's ranting. He's an a-hole the entire movie. And I love when the production manager of Fitzcarraldo was like, well, then don't eat it. Then don't eat it if you like the food. Then don't eat it. He stands still. Kinski's raving around, which is also, by the way, another performance. He's always on. He's always – tonight the role of Klaus Kinski will be played by Klaus Kinski. Like, he's always on, right? But at the end with the butterfly, you know, I guess it was like, oh, but he also has a soft spot. Like, I don't know. I didn't really hear that, like, Tony Montoya really also loves his sister. Like, I didn't care about any of that. But there is something at the end about us – wanting to like the people whose art we admire. And I think that's a very human thing. Like, we want to believe that the people who create beautiful things are likable. And sometimes they're not. Like, sometimes you can't have it both ways, right? You want to imagine that if you ever got to talk to Jimmy Stewart, he would act just like who?
All of his characters.
Yeah,
every
Jimmy
single
Stewart.
One of them.
He would act like Jimmy Stewart, right? Now we know a lot about Jimmy Stewart. We've seen a lot of stuff, but there's people that you don't know anything about, but you want to imagine that there's good in the people whose work we admire. And I think maybe the butterfly is a gesture towards that, but I think it's a human reaction, but you certainly don't get it from this movie.
Did you not take it as a joke? I don't know. It felt to me as though if the two of them were sitting around one night drinking,
maybe they laugh at it.
That Kinski was like, if you ever make a movie about me, this is how it should end. Because it seems to me, I don't know, it feels like an in-joke. It certainly doesn't belong. But it could, I'm open to the idea that it doesn't belong in a creative way.
Yes, I mean.
I'm open to the idea that there's something more that I don't get right now.
Because you cannot get to Kinski sub one. You cannot get to the bottom of Kinski, or I think to anybody. I mean, that's the Citizen Kane thing, right? You can't get to the bottom of a person.
I mean, he does throw in one other false trail, which is that he does the interview with the actress who won the award for playing the wife in Wojciech. And she says, no, he was a darling. He was great. He altered physical reality with his voice, you know, that there was a presence that surrounded him, and that he was never untoward. And she has no reason to say that. It's not like he is going to sue her for slander or anyone else because he's dead. But I guess that raises the question, is she just speaking well of the dead?
Yes. I think she was being great, or she was like, this is my experience. I don't know. But I think that you remember the butterfly thing is contrasted with him from the clip in the movie of him pulling the boat on the ocean and just ranting on the ocean again. And Herzog says, remember his cause of death? He says he had burned himself out. He was like a comet. And yeah, you get it. And that's why he shows the death scene from Nosferatu, right? Is that he just burned himself out. He could no longer live by taking the life force out of other people. It was too much and nothing could sustain him. So like Neil Young, right? It's better to burn out than fade away. He definitely burns out. But I think at the end, I don't know if it's ultimately an in-joke, and maybe we'd have to know more. You'd have to know more about Klaus Kinski than we do to decide how much of an in-joke that was. But I think sometimes, I think what this movie reminded me of is that sometimes there's people whose art you admire without admiring the person. And sometimes we want to have it both ways. You can like The Doors and recognize who Jim Morrison was.
They weren't that dissimilar.
Thanks for listening, everybody. You could follow us on X at 15minfilm. You could also follow us where, Mike?
Where all the other inanities of society are uttered in the sphere of our social indwellings with one another as citizens.
We'll see you next time.